Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the is so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Welcome back to Action Jack. I'm Tom Holly. Just met Weber on the board. Back from a trip to Vancouver. We have Mr. Kevin O'Neill as well. S&P futures up 550. NASDAQ futures up 19. Dow futures up 50. As in this world of letting some people off the hook and other people doing other things, we've got the president letting a few more people off the hook on tariffs, plastic straws, and a couple other things. And making the war that we never even had a war. Mike Pence, the era of economic surrender is over. We're leading the charge for you people, or something along those lines. Maybe I put the last part in myself. I'm glad I got Mike fighting wars for me. I didn't even know I had, but, you know, it's nice to know. Kevin, how are you?
Good morning. I'm doing great. It's a Friday. What could be wrong?
Yeah, I'm going to start a few wars against some people I don't like either and just say it's everybody's war, you know, type of thing. Whatever, you know, it's just one of those things. You can define anything any way you want, Kevin.
Explain that one.
You can define anything any way you want. I mean, it's hard for me to figure out how
who started a war just because they don't like somebody.
We have a war with China. This is not a war.
Are we doing that because we just don't like China?
We do because they've been screwing us for 40 years and. In our mind.
Oh, okay, that's a little different.
But
Whether you like the tactics or not, that's a little bit different than I'm starting a war with someone just because I don't like
them. Well, an economic war, but who knows what it might lead to. Just saying.
Okay. But you got to reconcile the starting a war with someone because I don't like them and starting a war because they've been screwing us for 40 years.
Well, you know, I'm saying we screwed back. Wasn't all one way, just saying.
All right.
So I have a question for you, you Mavens, since we want to do some sports here today. If you guys, you and Maddie, so I waited all week for Maddie to come back. You realize how complicated these tiebreakers are for these, like.
you waited all week for somebody sensible to come on the show, huh?
Well, okay. I figured he might have a chance. What are the chances of AV, giving me a few right answers in a playoff, you know?
Wait a minute. So when
not really, but hey, you know, Lika did a nice job.
She did. She did.
When
and you know just a quick comment. You know, from day one, where she, you know, clearly would have been nervous and just kind of trying to remember her way through everything. To day two, you know, her reports on the air and so on just got markedly better.
Yes.
I think the young woman deserves some applause.
She
and probably the guy who trained her did a pretty good job with her.
Yes, I think he has.
Well, that's good to hear, because I didn't get to listen. I plan to go back and listen and give her some notes, but that's good to hear.
It wasn't always perfect, but, you know, it's a first run through and just getting dumped in flying solo. I think she did a pretty good job.
I think it's hilarious how, and I keep giving her grief about the her English is so, it's obviously a second language, so it's so perfect. And she does sound like you sound like my, like the fifth grade school teacher. Everything's exactly perfect. Oh, Tom. Okay. But she's funny. But, you know, it's weird when you try and, I use, you know, once in a while I break into my South Side slang. And, so I go, she got this new job, right? So they had a big crowd this one night and I said, you know, some scratch. And she's like, why would they scratch me? No. Did you make any money? She had no idea what scratch was. So
yeah, slang is always fun with people who are learning your language in a second.
Yeah, and I can understand why that would be. It'd be like you can say somebody, learn Chinese. I remember my Latin teacher, who actually was a Spanish teacher as well, and he said he learned a language. He knew Spanish fluently. And when they had a teacher-parent conference, he was actually at a Hispanic school. The parents only spoke Spanish. And he goes, oh, no problem. I'll understand it. Because I had the world's roughest day. I needed an interpreter because I don't know what, because there's all kinds of different, there's different Spanishes out there. It's like there's different, how many different dialects of Chinese is there? I mean, I don't even know if people who speak Chinese can speak the different dialects very well.
Yeah, can you speak Southside for a certain
Well,
dialect,
not many people can.
Even that comes into play.
Absolutely. So I thought I'd have a very simple, in case anybody called in or wrote
it. I can imagine Barbara Billingsley going, perhaps I can help. I speak Southside.
Yes, I speak jive. That was funny. I'm not very politically correct, but funny.
Couldn't make that movie today.
No. Well, you know what? What we're talking about is actually a not just kind of interesting banter at this hour in the morning on a Friday. It actually is business. I'm going to say you're never going to see on a large scale with big actors and so forth. You're never going to see another movie like Caddyshack. You're never going to see a movie like Animal House. You're probably not even going to see a movie like The Sting. Because I'm going to say, man, you know more, but correct me. I'm going to say 40-50% of the revenues of any big blockbuster movie now is overseas. And any movie like that, which is all language and sort of slapstick and a little bit slang and humor, is a fart in church. They just don't get it overseas or another language. So that's why you have five lines of script and, you know, 98 pages of computers blowing people up, because that sells anywhere. You don't need a Battlestar Galactica. You don't have to worry about the language difference.
I think there's some truth to that. Yeah.
There's a lot of truth. I mean, I've read that. I'm very different. Somebody read it. Why don't they get a movie like, even one that's not, that's all dialogue, because nobody wants it overseas. It doesn't translate well. And, I would have a feeling in Caddyshack, maybe in Japan where they play a lot of golf, but other places, like, what are these guys even doing? Right? I mean, I thought, just so I would edumacate myself, as my grandmother used to say, on tiebreakers, since the Cubs I thought might be near a tiebreaker. Well, I honestly, my gut tells me they're going to be like five games out by the time this is all over, but I sure hope not. Anyway, did you know that there actually are tiebreakers where they have a A, B, and C team that designation before you play the games? I'm not hearing you guys do it.
So you're saying,
well, you can go on, and then and then we'll let.
I'll give you a quick. Even though there's like 10 of these,
brilliant man.
Three teams.
So you're talking about a three-way tiebreaker.
Well, some two, some three, some four. But I'll give you the simple one. Three teams tie for a division title. This too is a mathematical possibility. Now your first tiebreakers are, if you go to the first one here, two teams tie for division title. They would play a one-game tiebreaker on Monday. Home field advantage, you are the club with a better head-to-head record. But now there's all kinds of these tiebreakers. Three teams tie. Let's do
which
this.
The Cubs and Brewers did last year, which we saw that.
Okay, well, let's try three teams tie for two wild card spots. This is a good one. Say the Indians, Rays, and the A's were all tied. The three teams would choose. They would choose / receive A, B, and C designations. All right. Now, those designations come from selection order, be based on the head-to-head records, i.e. Cardinals combined winning percentage versus Cubs and Brewers, Cubs combined winning percentage versus Cardinals and Brewers, and Brewers combined winning percentage versus Cardinals and Cubs. So there's going to be a 1-2-3 designation.
Right, so they don't choose.
So they make a mini division.
But then what happens is, now the A team gets the pick. All right, so if the Indians, Rays were all tied, the three teams would choose receive A, B, C designations. Club A would host Club B, and the winner would advance to the wild card game. Okay. Club C would then host the loser, between Club A and Club B. Again, the three designations are decided by head-to-head records. If the A's went 9-4, blah, blah, blah. So this would prevent a dilemma for the club with the first choice. Would the A's prefer two shots at an advancement? One at home, and that doesn't go well, one on the road. despite the impact that might have on their pitching staff with yet another sudden death game looming the day after? Or would they prefer to take their chances on a single home game as Club C? So in other words, the number one team gets to pick whether they're the A, B, or C team.
And when you make that first pick, you don't know who's going to choose to be B and C, do you?
Correct. So if
you're also rolling the dice trying to predict what the other team is going to do, because you may have a team where you match up really well and you want to say, well, I want the one gamer then. You know, I want to be done with it.
Well, it's more really probably if you have
beating team B, but then they cross you up and say, well, I'll be the C team.
Well, but it more has to do with if you just used your best pitcher, say, on Saturday. You know, and he can only, obviously he's going to pitch one more time. You think you can bring him back on Tuesday, you're going to pick the one game effort. Probably. Or you may decide, I'll pitch somebody else on Monday, and then if he loses, then I get to pitch my best guy on the road on Tuesday. Or you may say, I'll just take the one game shot at home, and after the other guys have already played a game. I mean, it is interesting. I don't know what I'd pick there. What would you guys? I mean, if all things were even, I mean, obviously it comes down to, because then you end up, if you pick the A, you got two chances to get in the playoffs, but then you really got to play three games just to start a series, which got to put you behind the eight ball a little bit. So it is pretty complicated.
A little bit. Go ahead, man.
Go ahead, man. What would you pick if you had the number one choice?
I'd always want the two cracks at it, I think.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah, so I would if I had the best record against the other two teams that tied me, and I had the choice, I would want to I get the A B matchup at home, hoping to win that, and if I don't get it, I want the second crack at it
on the road.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so you've burned. Well, maybe you haven't burned your best pitcher at home.
No, not necessarily.
Yeah. I think I would too.
No, and you could go then. You know, if you get in, you could go into the series a little bit the next series a little bit hamstrung, but at least at that point you have time to recover from.
Yeah, but you're not going into the series. You're playing another wild card playoff.
Right. No, I understand that. I'm just saying if you finally win all of your of your games to get into the actual first round series. You may go in there, diminished because you've used up so much to get there, but you have some time to recover at that point.
I think you do too.
You may lose your first game, but you just get a little bounce back time.
But it is interesting. It's a combination of essentially tiebreakers, but then you got to play it off as well.
It's a combination of tiebreakers, strategy. That's actually pretty interesting.
Well, I mean, it's not just saying, okay, who gets the tiebreaker spot, the Cubs or the Cardinals? Well, the Cubs won the season series 10-6. They get it. I mean, obviously, in some things, that wins, right? In football, it does, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you don't play off for the last wild card spot.
Yeah, because football, it's just completely impractical to add an extra tiebreaker round.
Right. Well, you know,
because that's a week, basically.
Right. Well, when the tiebreakers go for the designation tiebreakers, it goes head to head, and if that's tied, then it goes division, and if that's tied, it goes the teams you played in the National or American League, whichever you're in, you pull the other league out. Which is actually somewhat interesting because don't all divisions play all the same people in the other league the same year? You wouldn't think that would make a difference if you're playing the same guys the same way.
Well, you are for your cross-division opponent, yeah. But you also have a couple of games based on your record the previous season, and those are drastically different.
In baseball, too?
No, I'm talking about in football.
Baseball. Yeah, baseball.
Baseball, you're pretty much playing the exact same team. The only difference would be the Cardinals get to play the Royals every year in their local rival, where the Cubs play the White Sox every year.
And how many teams?
Sometimes that can change. Everyone has their geographical interleague series that they play.
Does anybody not have that?
No, everyone has one. Some of them make more sense than others. I mean,
who does Seattle play?
San
Francisco?
It's a good question. No, the Giants team is the A's, obviously. San Francisco, Oakland. There's some, you know, where it's not perfect. I don't know. I'd have to look and see who Seattle is.
If it's not any of the California teams.
Dodgers play the Angels. Yeah. You know, Cubs play the White Sox. Yankees play the Mets. Cardinals play the Royals. I remember Dusty Baker famously would always talk about, you know, it's not fair that the Cubs have to play the White Sox, who at that time were really good, and the Cardinals get to play the Royals, who at that time were, like, you know, really, really bad. And but it evens out over a long period of time. Obviously, the Royals have won a World Series since.
Plus, they're down to four games, right?
Yeah, yeah, they're only playing four games now instead of six.
I can't even imagine who the Seattle play.
It must be Reds and Indians then.
Yeah,
Reds and Indians. Yep. Yeah, everyone has one of these. I think Tampa Bay is the Marlins, but some of them don't make as much sense as the others. Rangers and Astros is one, or no, it's not, because the Astros are in the American League now. It used to be one. Now I don't know who those guys do. But yeah, I'd have to. I bet I could find that.
But everybody's got one. There's nobody. They say they're just. I mean, I would say for Washington, why even have one? I mean,
they play Baltimore.
Seattle plays Baltimore.
Oh, you just said Washington.
No, I'm in Seattle.
I'll find who Seattle plays.
It's a bizarre. Well, anyway, Kevin, I was. You know, we've covered a lot of topics this week, and we're trying to go over this this thing again today with. Carl, regarding the stuff the Fed was doing, but I got a interesting email yesterday from David Parks, who obviously you know always helps the show out with stuff, and he was telling me about there was a some guy in the administration, and David is about as I'm going to say he's a toe of the Hun right wing, but he's close, but he also has a certain moral sense. And he was telling me something about some guy. I'm going to find it here. My email is kind of going.
Mariners play the Padres, by the way. Seattle, San Diego.
Close enough. Out there somewhere.
Yeah.
But he was saying how the amount of people in this administration that have pushed for, you know, a specific outcome in one of these, like, interior things, and the minute they get the outcome, they leave and go to work for the company. Is, you know, I'm not saying that this administration is worse than any other, but, you know, Kevin, I thought there was some kind of law passed that you couldn't go work for a firm that you'd done business with for a couple of years or something. You know, the Trump administration decided they don't want to deal with that, or what?
I have no idea, because I don't ever remember a time when that has been well enforced.
I don't either.
And I would be very, very amenable to just finding the people who do that and beating the crap out of them.
Yeah, I just, you know, I don't know what we keep going back and forth on the show, and you know what, and to be perfectly blunt, sometimes in discussions over, you know, coffee, tea, well, something stronger, and I wonder, Kevin, if we can put, you know, I talked to some people yesterday regarding some of the numbers and what's going on in Illinois. We had a group. Actually, retired policemen and a few other people I was talking to last night, and they're talking about the Illinois. Is there any sense of how you can put this state, you know, possibly back the? This is here it is right here. In summary, I might as well read this since I already talked about it. The Enforcement Division of the CFTC runs a 5-year investigation into silver price manipulation. Only to immediately close the investigation once presented with irrefutable whistleblower evidence of said manipulation. Head of the Enforcement Division, David Meister, you know, I know that name. I wonder if I met that guy when I was on the CBOE. Quits the CFTC. Quits the CFTC within a week of closing this investigation. Meister then takes a job with Washington law firm Skadden LLP. Skadden LLP had been retained by Michael Nowak, 2019, former head of the J.P. Morgan Precious Metals Desk. Is his defense attorney. He's the lead attorney defending Nowak is David Meister. How does that even happen, Kevin?
Don't know. You know, what's so annoying is that we've lost all sense that getting involved in government is a matter of service. You know, the idea of service to the country, service to your state, service to fellow citizens is completely out the window. Government is now a different way to become wealthy.
Right.
And, you know, as long as that's the prevailing attitude, we're kind of screwed.
Yeah, I wonder if, and I'm certainly not going to go the Muslim route where you got to confuse religion with government. I'm certainly not going to go there. You know, and I think everybody knows that even though I'm proud of the fact that I was brought up Catholic and I think taught by people the difference between right and wrong, I, you know, it's not like I go banging into a church every Sunday. I probably should, but I don't. And, but somewhere, I don't know that when you lose your moral core, whether anything else is even really possible, Kevin, because I don't know if you're on foot or horseback. I honestly don't. I mean, if people can't sit there and say, well, if that's the way we're going to do business, it's not going to work out for 8 million people, 300 million people, whatever the number is, whether it's Illinois, whether it's the country. If you can't look at things and make, I'm not saying there can't be disagreements over methods, but if you can't figure out that stealing from a state that's broke is probably not something you should be doing. I mean, I don't know how you can help you. I mean, I don't know if there's a law that can be passed or something or that is the silver bullet. I don't see how that can be. I really don't. And I don't, I mean, especially if you're trying to be, well, I think we're still trying to be the moral spot of the world, aren't we? Because there's a lot of other people that don't seem to get this at all. I mean, I don't know how you can do anything in either the Trump administration, the Pritzker administration, whoever it is, if you've got people in there lining their own pockets. I mean, I mean, I'm not saying everybody should be perfect, but the whole idea that, you know, that your aldermen half the time are being lawyers against the city or something like that, or doing tax deals or trying to get people to pay less tax. I know it's going to happen on some level, and to a certain extent, you know, politics, quote, work, and there's always going to be a little something, somebody's got to wet their beak somewhere along the line, and you can't ever squeeze 90% out of it, but the number better be 75 or 80 out of there, or I don't think you can, I don't know if you can grow forward, Kevin, I really don't. I mean, you know, I'm not trying to be a moralist, everybody knows I'm not, but good, I mean, I don't know that you can be corrupt and get anywhere. I mean, that's why Italy doesn't get anywhere. It's friggin' corrupt, right? I mean, that's why, you know, Chicago, when there was so much money being made here, I mean, you blessed us first as the shipping hub. For those that don't know, there was a time when Chicago had more ship, what do they call it? Something in arrival, show up on arrival and whatever, arrival and leaving, than New Orleans. Now, the ships weren't the same size, but, I mean, and then it became, obviously, the rail hub and everything else. You can't get west, the northern part of the country, you can't get west from east without going through Chicago. I mean, and then there was the I&M Canal. But, I mean, talk about blessed. So there's massive amounts of money. So even if there was a little corruption on the side, it's almost entertainment. Well, now there's not massive amounts of money. And the people still think they're entitled to the corruption. It looks weird. You know, I give a analogy, Kevin, is I used to go to spring training every year. And, you know, as much as it bothers me when people do it, you can go out to Wrigley, you can go out to even Sox Park these days without a whole hell of a lot of fans, and you can yell from center field when Matt Weber's on the mound, Matt Weber's a bleep hole, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. As long as there's not a bunch of kids around, some dad says, hey, shut up.
Lucky guess.
Yeah, okay. Type of, I mean, or whatever. You can get away with that, because there's 40,000 people, and it's pretty darn loud. Go out to spring training one year, there's some idiot, is like 10 feet away from some guy in left field, you're an ass! You know, the guy turns around and he goes, would you shut up? And Keith Moreland went over the fence one guy, and he started beating the crap out of him. I mean, the guy would not. He's like 8 feet away from him, with nobody else around, screaming, you know, whatever at the guy. I mean, don't people get just because maybe a fan that they can't hear you in his din, but when you're standing right next to somebody, it doesn't work. I mean, and now that the state's broke, I have a much dimmer view of people stealing money than I did when it was flush. I probably shouldn't, but it seems more significant to me. Or am I just being wrong here?
No, I don't think you are being wrong, and. You know, there's some recognition out in the world because you have so many businesses that have, you know, like somebody is appointed as the ethics officer for the company, and you know, whatever. There's all these constructs built around it, but everybody looks at, you know, it doesn't start with the big things. It kind of ends and comes crashing down or comes apart with the big things. So, you know, in my world, you know, you really want to work on ethics at your business. You know, just start giving your people for their team meetings. Give them a topic. You know, talk amongst yourselves. I'll give you a topic. Yeah, but you know, some something simple. You know, what do you do when you have a boss who's taking credit for one of your coworkers' ideas, you know, good ideas? What do you do if, you know, and you can come up with these kind of everyday ethics scenarios. And if you really want to build a culture, it starts there. It starts with, you know, just dealing with the kinds of things that everybody does every day. Don't discuss the Wells Fargo case. Don't discuss EpiPens and pricing and all that. Those are big splashy news. But you know what? If you learn how to get the everyday stuff right, you at least have a fighting chance to get the big stuff right.
I would agree.
I think we've really lost track of that. I mean, if I were going to build an ethics program for a customer, for a business, that's exactly what I'd do. Is I'd say, you know, I'm going to push out a topic every day, your weekly team meetings. I want you to discuss this. Spend at least 10 minutes. Just throw it out and say, guys, what do you think? What would you do? What are your choices? We've just so very much lost sight of the small stuff that it's no surprise that the big stuff is so messed up.
Well, even the simple stuff where Maddie says I'm the only guy left that actually says what article, who wrote the article I'm quoting from. And why don't people do that? I mean, somebody wrote the damn thing.
I think that's a great example.
SP Futures up 5, Dow Futures up 50. We'll be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, Give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now. Right here, right now.
Welcome up, Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tamami's Mr. Kevin O'Neill, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures up 6.25. NASDAQ Futures, well, September is up 6.25. December, which we're probably flipping forward to, I'm going to say probably today, maybe next week. Well, that's a David question. They're up 4.25. So, and then NASDAQ is up 1575 for September. Dow Futures up 50. Individual stocks, today, we do still, Federal Express has still not come back from that 20-point drubbing the other day. It was up like a dollar and a half yesterday, but the rest of the transportation was down fairly heavy with it. Fed's Bullard, explaining why he had a dissent to the rate cut, says the U.S. manufacturing appears to be in a recession. By the way, I agree with him 100% about the manufacturing not doing as well as people keep telling you it is. As to whether or not a rate cut would help any of those plants, I have zero confidence in any of that, so I would debate him on his, not his first choice, but his second. Anyway, over in Europe, we've got DAX up 8, call that flat, FTSE up 11.1%. Check around a little something, up 19.3%. We're in Asia, we've got the Nikkei up 34.1%, Shanghai up 7.2%, Hang Seng down 33.1%. I'm going to say this to be like a Friday in the summertime here. At least it's leading that way. Bonds, 1.78. So they're up 30 basis points from the low. Okay, which is a lot. Bund up 28 basis points from the low at minus 0.51. It was down as much as minus 0.79. Japan kind of back under the 20 number, minus 21. They made it from 24 to 29 to 15 back to 21. So they're not gaining the upside like the other two are. Silver up 6 cents, 1794. Gold up 450, 1510. Anybody up for his traffic, weather, sports?
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. It's good to be back. We have a couple of issues already to report on the area expressways, which is rare for a Friday morning. It looks like the inbound Edens just before Devon Avenue, there's a crash blocking the right lane. This has traffic building on the Edens. Lake Hook Road to Montrose up to 29 minutes, so some solid traffic coming in on the Edens as you're heading toward the Kennedy there. Kennedy itself looks okay. No issues on the Eisenhower. We do have a crash on the south side, though. The Dan Ryan is closed right now eastbound between the Stevenson and 31st Street. All traffic still forced into the express lanes from the much earlier semi-into-the-wall crash that happened this morning. Extensive roadway damage, concrete broken, light pole leaning, etc. Downtown to 95th has solid traffic due to that. So all traffic still being diverted to the express lanes at this hour on the Dan Ryan. Suburban tollways are looking okay. Off the expressways looking good, too. Weather today will be mostly clear, warm temperatures, a high of 82. Should be a nice day, but clouds early. Right now it's 71 and overcast, going up to a high of 82. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 97 today. Right now it's clear and 73. In sports, Cubs couldn't touch the Cardinals starter Flaherty last night, scoring just one run through eight innings. But in the ninth, they rallied for three to tie it at four, and then promptly gave up a solo home run to Matt Carpenter in the tenth. Cubs dropped their third straight, losing to the Cardinals 5-4. Find themselves four games back now in the NL Central. Even worse than that, though, going all the way back to earlier in the season, if the playoffs were to start today, the Cubs would be out.
Out!
They are one game behind Milwaukee, who is surging right now for that second wild card spot. So the Cubs need to get it together. They'll play at 1:20 this afternoon. Alec Mills with a spot start, which is not a great sign. But we'll see if he can give them some innings and then get back on track.
Who's he going in ahead of?
I don't know. I've been kind of out of touch this week, so I need to figure out what's going on. I don't know if Kevin knows what that's about.
Well, since Lester and Heinrich, and the night before was Hamels, who was there for like a minute. What's his name? He won one of the games. Darvish, right? He pitched against Cincinnati.
Darvish lost to the Reds.
Okay, well, Hamels ended up winning that game, but he only lasted three innings.
Yeah.
Anthony Rizzo returned to the lineup briefly last night, hit a home run, and tied the game at one apiece earlier in that game. He was pulled about halfway through, precautionary. I think they're going to kind of test that ankle, see how it looks like this morning, but they're going to try to play him. And Javier Baez actually came in late and scored the tying run as a pinch runner. He's not ready to hit yet. He had the big protective glove on his thumb, but he can still run, and so he was out there and scored the tying run. But Cubs fall short. Need to get it going here. 9 games to go. White Sox were off. Diamondbacks were off. Thursday Night Football, it was the Jags over the Titans, 20-7. Chief.
I was doing my usual rant at Mr. Weber on the way in, which he obviously must be getting tired of. It's amazing to me, Kevin, how I believe, even though I dozed for a little bit of it, is the Cardinals, I think I saw him bunt last night twice, and both, one guy actually bunted well enough for a base hit, and the other guy bunted the execution was absolutely flawless. Every time I see a guy in a Cubs bunt, they screw it up. What is the difference?
They are not good at that. They're not much of a team for bunting in the first place, but as a strategy. But you know what? Remember, Madden used to squeeze a lot, and I haven't seen one of those. No. I don't know how long. So that may be a function of the people. You know, one mention from last night's game, watching it. There was a lot of praise at the time for Jason Hayward's at bat that got the tying run home, and it was good. It was really good, but no mention at the time of what a nice play the second baseman Edmund made to keep that ball from going into right field.
It saved the game. The Cubs win.
It absolutely saved the game because they would have had a man on third with one out instead of a man on second with two outs. And a much higher, they still may not have executed, but a much higher probability of getting home one more run in the ninth inning and winning the game. And that guy made a hell of a play on that ball.
It was a huge play, and Horner came up next and smoked a ball to deep center that would have obviously been deep enough to win the game on a sac fly. Not saying that that would have played out the exact same, but the percentage of them winning that game was very high. That was a hell of a play by the second baseman, and it didn't get mentioned at all. I mean, no one said anything.
Well, yeah, I was sitting there watching the game and going, you guys, they got an out out of that, they took away a base hit.
I'm going to lob a shout out there. You can listen to these national TV broadcasts, and if you're baseball touts like we are, they miss a lot. God knows what they're talking about. Just saying.
I don't know if it's just because they do like one game a week or what it is, but they're not good.
Man, it was a 3-hour-and-40-minute game. At some point, those guys are dozing.
Yeah.
Even a 10-inning game does not – 3:40 is a long time. I mean, for God's sake. I mean,
it was a Fox broadcast, so I don't know if they do the extra commercials like ESPN, I think, does. And it was a very slow game leading up to that, and it's a 10-inning game.
I mean, time your buddy. Your the chicken hawk look into home place. What's his
Kimbrel?
Name?
Kimbrel? He's not my buddy. I texted my actual buddies, and I said, I guarantee he gives up a run here. And he strikes the first guy out and actually looks really good. And I'm like, well, maybe I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong. And then Carpenter, who hasn't hit all season long, has been batting in the 220s all year, has been benched to the point where he plays like one game a week. Just absolutely tattoos a fastball, like 420 feet to left center. And it's like, oh, there you go.
He's 40 seconds between pitches. The rule is supposed to be 20. He's double it.
Did you have your stopwatch out?
The last time he pitched, I did. I'm
fine. Again, electric shock, you know, at a certain point for the pitcher, if you haven't thrown, would be fine with me. I think that could work.
If there's a man on base, he's 41,
you know,
42.
Put a shock collar on all the pitchers.
If there's nobody on base, he's 37, 38.
Every other sport has a shot clock. Whether you're talking about basketball, whether you're talking about the play clock in football, I don't know why baseball is so against actually doing that and enforcing it. I don't. Why not? And if you're late, it's ball one, ball two.
Well, the interesting part is if you want to shorten up the game, and I'm getting good at this because obviously I'm doing a lot of stuff for the show a lot of times. May not seem like it, but I am. if you hit the stop on your TV. A pause. I'm still getting used to this stuff after 40 years. And you come back and you do it for a football game, you're buzzing through the huddles and you're buzzing through commercials. And you don't buzz through the play itself because the play is fine, right? I mean, once you snap the ball. Baseball, you're buzzing the whole inning. I just put it on the first fast forward and just watch the whole inning. And if somebody actually gets a hit, then I'll hit the play. But it's the actual play itself, the pace of the game. If you were to put a game from 1972 next to one today and just watch the pitcher and the batter's actions, it's 15 seconds, about 10 seconds more between pitch. You don't see the batting glove, you know, redo every single time out of the guys don't leave the pitcher gets the ball back. He's already looking at the catcher's sign. And as soon as everybody's ready, he throws it.
They had some pokey people, but yeah. You know, there was also this ethic that said, you want to be pokey there, Mr. Batter, go ahead. I'm going to knock you down then. And yeah. I'm not suggesting that that's the right solution, because throwing baseballs at people is probably a really bad idea.
Yep.
But that was at least the ethic of the game that people understood, was that you didn't do that. That's too normal on that side, and then pitchers take forever too.
Well, I think the big
at least they've limited mound visits. That helps a lot.
Yeah.
And, good Lord, there were times you'd sit there and say that guy visits the mound three times an inning.
Well, I think the biggest change that I see is in softball, obviously there's a big difference. But if somebody steps out of the box in softball and I'm ready to go, the minute the guy gets back in, I'm letting it fly. Again, don't be comparing me to, one of these good pitchers in baseball, but the interesting part is if the batter wanders around for 10 seconds, the pitcher gives him the 10 seconds, and only when he steps back in does he start his routine to look for the sign. You would think that you would do your stuff before the guy gets back in there, and the minute he's there, you let it go. But they don't. It one has to follow the other, is what I'm saying. And that I see is the difference.
I hear what you're saying, yep.
But if the batter, by the time he goes over and gets his pint, well, they don't do that much anymore, but, you don't start your routine until he does his routine. And it really is, it's a pokey thing. I mean, I don't know. When we started adding 5 or 6 seconds per pitch, That's a lot, and it's all dead time. It's not active time,
So shot collars for everybody, not just the pitchers. Then,
yeah. Well, anyway, Kevin, to get back to our subject before, I think we're kind of right that I think it's time, and I don't know where we find someone like this. I'm gonna guess we probably have to find it in a third party attempt. I think somebody somewhere. I mean, if we can roll Lincoln over in his grave or something and pull a bullet out of his head or whatever we have to do, we need somebody who is kind of above reproach, that has kind of where somebody at one of these campaign rallies, when a Catherine Harris lights out at Joe Biden about being consorting with racists in his time, when you're 70-some years old, guess what? When you were 30, I think it's possible to find some racists now. I mean, And you know what? If you're ever seen with one, doesn't make you one. Somebody on that stage has to, whether she's African American, whether she's female, whether she's female, whoever you are, whether it be a white man or somebody on the stage, has got to say, you know what? I'm standing up here with 15 other people or 10 or whatever number it is, and I think, in my opinion, as my mother used to tell me, it never makes you taller by making somebody else shorter. So for you to accuse another person on this stage of being a racist with zero evidence, zero anything other than trying to make you look better, guess what? It didn't work. It makes you look shorter, too. Why didn't somebody say that to her or whoever it is that's doing this stuff, Kevin?
Hey, people are saying it to her, which is why she's fallen into single digits.
Well, I mean, but I'm saying somebody has to just say, I'm not doing that. I'm talking about the issues. Ask me any stupid question you want about somebody's wife's outfit from last week. It's not what I'm here for. Why can't somebody have the balls, it doesn't have to be a male. Why doesn't everybody have the balls to just say that? That's not what I'm here for. On either side.
I don't know. I don't know what to tell you.
I saw de Blasio dropped out.
Why don't they? Lack of nerve, don't want to alienate people, say, well, when I catch up, I want to get the Biden voters. I don't know what it is. I really don't know what to tell you is the thought process behind it, because it doesn't make a lot of sense. But you know, it is where we are.
Well, we end up with some kind of a, I won't say before, we end up with some sort of a comic character in the White House playing to some, you know, some law. I mean, Obama did the same thing, played to his people the same way this guy's playing. But when you get in there, there needs to be, you know, like the when the Irish get on, they just hit the sign, play like a champion today. There's got to be a sign above the Oval Office that said, remember, you're the president to all the people, not just the people who voted for you. I mean, does anybody, I mean, I wouldn't worry about the states that didn't want me. I have to govern that state too, right? Or that's why I'll never get there, or nobody like us will ever get there.
Well, yeah, it probably is. You know, don't know what to tell you, Tom, other than, you know, I don't know if we're going to get sick of it or not. I mean, as a country, we do have a habit of kind of overreacting to things. So we may get a pushback, you know, here, where we go completely the other way. But who's out there? I mean, you know, I have sitting on the back of my car a bumper magnet that says "Any Functioning Adult 2020."
Well, I mean, I
haven't found one that I support.
I'm going to say, Kevin. I'm going to say, Kevin, there are people that are out there. I think there are people that have that kind of backbone. I think there are people that have. I'm going to say, I thought that after, even though he got drummed out dramatically, I thought Tillerson was very capable. I thought Henry Baker was very capable. I thought some of the people on the Democratic side over the last few years, people like Dan Inouye, people like that, were very capable. But are there, I think there's people that have a moral fiber that have. I thought, oh, what's his name? Who's a general that never wanted to run? African American guy.
Powell.
Very capable. I think what's her name, Rice, is very capable. I think there's people on both sides, but they want no part of this the way it's being set up. And I don't blame them, and that's a problem.
I think you have that's a good point, and so there are people out there who might be able to do this, but you know, who are they? And you know, as we list them, then why can't we attract them in? And you know, in part, it's because no matter what you do, if the established order wants to resist, they're going to make your life miserable.
Well, I'll say it in what I consider to be clinical terms from the trading floor. The skill set necessary to get the job is becoming far and far away from the skill set needed in the job. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's probably true.
You
now,
have,
and part of it is also, who do you hire? You know, Lou has talked a whole lot, you know, as an example about, you know, Trump's MO. You know, that everything is transactional. There's no long-term viewpoint on things. It's always the next transaction, the next deal, the next issue, and none is related to the other, which is absolutely horrible leadership, by the way. And but in addition to that, you have the issue of, you know, he gets enamored of people so quickly and brings them on board, and then sort of figures it out later that they're not good and they get canned. Or asked to resign and don't fit, you know, whatever it is, you have this this impulsive style that seems to work for him pretty well on the campaign trail. You know, he reads his audiences pretty well,
oh, yeah.
For better or for worse, he reads them pretty well. But then he turns around and doesn't read everything pretty well on a day in day out basis.
Well, I'm going to say, and again, I always look for people that have and. Trust me, I'm not making comparisons, but I have trying to do more and more research, especially since my buddy Robert is spectacular at this. You know, the guy could write a book tomorrow off the top of his head of of Germany from 1920 to 1935, and all the mayhem that was happening and all the crazy stuff and thugs on the street and couldn't walk down the main and the rise of National Socialism and Hitler. And I tell you what, Kevin, I've become a little bit of a crazed. If you go on YouTube, you can go back and see these pictures that were never published anywhere, you know, from the 20s, the 30s, in various countries. I tell you what, there is nobody that had a connection with common people for the first 5 or 6 years he was there than that guy. You would never have guessed well, I guess you would have, because he wrote a book saying what he was going to do, but I'm saying people they forgot all about that. He cleaned that place up, and he was a master at any photo op. Before people even knew what a photo op was, he makes Bill Clinton look like a child when he visited the sick and everything. I mean, there is, don't think that these people, and again, I'm not comparing one of them, they have an amazing skill set that a lot of regular people don't get. Well, that guy's an idiot. No, he's not. I mean, you'll never get me, I'll complain about Trump's economic knowledge, something that I know something about. You will never get me to say that the man does not have a skill set. All kinds of people wanted that job, and he got it. There is a skill set there that nobody else has. You're right, he picks up a room, he understands why people are pissed off, and he goes right for it. I mean, but I'm saying other people have had that skill set as well, and when we're starting it, but now it's a point, you have to have been on TV, you have to have been recognizable. I was having a big discussion with somebody.
Yeah, you got to be a celebrity to run now.
Yeah, and, somebody was asking
it's
me.
Not the substance; it's the recognition.
Yeah, but you know, somebody was asking me about why would a guy like Scaramucci, who is a Wall Street guy and evidently got all kinds of money, and from what I understand, he's supposed to be a pretty decent guy. Anyway, why would he take that job in the White House? And I'm like, don't you understand? If you ever expect to get anywhere in government, if you think the country, whatever you are, right, left, middle, upside down, I don't care, if you think that you can, quote, help and want to be in the mainstream, you need to get, I'm going to use the term, free individual publicity. And nothing gets you there more than being on some kind of a TV show where you're, like, getting paid for, or by being in government where you're standing next to the president, you're doing this, you come out and make a nice speech once in a while, it's going to get you a little problem with. But say he didn't. Say he came off as a pretty bright guy. Kevin, you couldn't buy that. If he did that for 6 months and he ran for senator without any campaign, the dude would get 25% of the vote just because people recognized him and he made a couple of nice, said a few nice things. I don't think people have, I mean, I have been the slowest ever in the, but every single person, Franklin Roosevelt and Adolf Hitler had two things, one thing seriously in common. What do you think that is?
Charm.
Well, that, but what else, Manny?
I have no idea, Chief. What
do you think? They embraced the radio faster than anybody they were running against. They used the radio like this guy used Twitter.
Yeah, so what you're saying is they had command command of media at the time. And that is true. Trump gets to control the message as he wants to deliver it. Now, the reporting of him is different. He has no control over that other than to criticize it. But you're right. He uses Twitter to just bypass media. And it works for him, and a lot of people are, you know, who don't like the media. I mean, heck, Cheryl Atkinson just tweeted out this morning her list of all of the, incorrect reporting that we've seen about the Trump administration, the same kind of thing I brought up on Wednesday. The list is incredible, and people have no faith whatsoever in media, and I think that's a both sides of the aisle thing.
Well, I mean,
going back to your original point too, is you're not going to accuse him of being stupid, because we have this habit. I mentioned on Wednesday that we have a habit of looking at our opponents and thinking they're madmen, where there's a certain rationality to what they do, and
sure
they're not. They may be dead wrong and evil and all kinds of things, but there is a rationale to what they do. And it's the same thing on our side, is we have this habit of thinking that our own leaders are idiots, and in fact, they wind up, they're not. Again, they may be dead wrong. You may, not like what they do, but they, like you said, they all have a skill set, and it's a skill set that works.
The part that is, when you look at the Trump phenomenon, and one of the things that really bothers me, I think he's a pretty tough guy. I mean, I personally can't stand him, man. Everybody knows that. But again, I'm going to attribute a lot of people I couldn't stand that were terrific softball hitters, and I sure as hell didn't want them coming up with guys on base when I was pitching. You have respect for people for what they do. I am stunned at how ineffective he has, and I'm actually afraid of it, Kevin, how ineffective he's been at going up against these big businesses that he swore he was going to deal with. Because if anybody could do it, it would have been him. And he got slapped back so fast from Boeing and his prescription drug companies, he's turned tail like a little weenie and gone the other way. He wants no part of a fight with those people. Yeah, how powerful are they?
Well, that's extra little weenie to you.
Well, but I'm saying, how powerful are they? And nobody can touch him. And I'm not saying he's a little weenie.
Well, that's right. That is the status quo. You know, look, there is entrenched power doesn't go away easily.
No, it sure doesn't. And I thought,
and it doesn't matter who the president is. It's just not going to give way. It's not going to give way in the political arena, and it's not going to give way in the areas affected by the political arena.
Kevin, thank you very much, buddy.
Anybody who thinks that they can go in and make it happen is kind of, you know, it's a nice idealism, but it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen easily.
No.
And it needs a lot more, a more informed public that just isn't going to put up with it. And we don't have the informed public.
A single answer question for money. 13.5 against Georgia. What do you do?
You don't bet. You know, you go look at things like the over-under because that's too much money to ever give. But by the same token, you know, it could be a 28-point game. It could be a close game. I don't know. Nobody knows anything about football at this time of year anyway. You know, people are so full of crap when it comes to that.
On that note, Kevin, take care.
Hey, look at the polls. Look at the polls now and look at the polls in 6 weeks.
S&P Futures up 6.
Everything you need to know.
We'll come back with Mr. Carl Denninger.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters, the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a 1 month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com, or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's John@PTISecurities.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Something happening.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holley. Mr. Mel Weber on the board. We also have Mr. Carl Denninger from Market Ticker. Is it .com or .org, Manny?
Market-ticker.org.
.org. I thought, how do you get an org? How do you be an org guy? You gotta be somebody big?
You gotta be Carl.
No, you can get an org just by registering your org.
It always seemed a little higher to me than the .com.
Well, you know, it's, There's some anachronisms in there. At one time, orgs were essentially nonprofit kind of things. Of course, you know, now there's 400 different top level domains, and there's not nearly the differentiation that there used to be. But the entire domain system used to be a government granted monopoly.
How did it get? What is it now? Three or four companies?
No, there are a large number of registrars now. The actual holders of the records are more or less a multi-government granted monopoly, but it used to be that there was one company that did all of this. You had no choice but to do business with them if you wanted a domain registered, and they charged, about $50 a year.
I think that's what we pay for, like, GoDaddy and stuff for our stuff.
Well, if you're paying $50, you're massively overpaying.
The
market price is down closer to 10 nowadays.
Well, we have kind of multiples by the time you got to get. I think we got. Didn't we start out with .org and ended up? Then we had to buy to .com.
We have .net. We have .com, and so they've sort of. You can type either one in and it works.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I think we could only get the .net because somebody had .com. Didn't we pay like $100 from the guy to get it from him one time, Eddie, or something? Something weird happened.
Something like that, yeah.
When you you brought up the part about non-profits, I don't know if I wanted to start here, Carl, but since I have you here, whatever topic that we mention, I always find that you're a guy to know. Other than not having shareholders to worry about and being able to pay yourself whatever you damn well feel like, what's the difference between a non-profit and a company? Because most companies, I don't care about shareholders either.
Well, nonprofits are supposed to be for some sort of public service purpose, so educational, you know, whatever have you with it. They are also technically forbidden from political activity, of course. You know,
well, that's,
we know how well that works out, right?
I mean, I look at, you know, and I can give them grief because I went there. I look at Notre Dame, and obviously you could look at Harvard and all these other places, and the billions of dollars, other than not having shareholders, who the hell controls these people? If the endowments get to be whatever, and all of a sudden Carl Denninger is making, you know, $48 billion as the head of the portfolio. Nothing has to trickle out the bottom to shareholders. It's just all absorbed by the quote management class, which I think is part of the problem in all the other industries. I don't think. The people at Commonwealth Edison really give a rat's behind about increasing the return to shareholders, do you? I mean,
there's the whole nonprofit thing is kind of an interesting twist on reality. I guess that's one way to put it.
I actually think that most companies, and the guy who starts me off thinking about this is our contributor, Professor Eric May. He goes, "We've never had a situation in this country before where the management class, they're the new robber barons. Only they don't have any money in the pie. At least Carnegie and Rockefeller was like their dough. You know, you can right. understand that." He goes, "No, these people, they suck the life out of everything. And what do they even do? I mean, the doctors aren't even the highest paid people in the medical profession. We've talked. We have this class that all sits at everybody else's board and keeps giving themselves a raise every month. And I don't know. I mean, I got to believe that." One of our listeners wrote in, he actually wanted me to ask you, when does it come to pass? I mean, obviously you've been in business and so forth. When does it come to pass that the city of Denninger, Florida says, you know what? We're paying all these people, teachers, whatever it is, policemen, firemen. I mean, I'm not denigrating anybody. We're paying them X number per year, and I keep looking at this median income number. It's like way less than X per year. You know what? The next contract, we're just getting rid of everybody, and we're going to put out a number, and we're going to say this is what we're paying. And again, I don't ever want to see anybody going down in wage. I want to see them going up. But the fact is, we're going to find a new phys ed teacher for 90 grand a year that's pretty damn good, and we don't need to pay 150. I mean, are we close to that? I mean, I hate to see that happen, but it seems like there's no other way to get there. We can't get there by collective bargaining once we're down this road so far. I mean, there's a lot of things. I mean, Kevin and I were talking earlier about when you have a country that can't figure out what the morals are, how do you figure out what other stuff is? I mean, are we that lost, I guess, is the question. Because one of our listeners wrote in and talked about a Trump guy who was on the CFTC doing something about a silver, people cornering the market on silver for some contract, and how the thing was all screwed up and it cost people a lot of money. And the guy, as soon as he dropped the thing, he went and worked for the law firm or was representing the other side or something. I mean, how are we going to get to there from here if we can't figure out that those people need to be in the stocks in the middle of the street or something?
Well, I don't know how you do. I mean, you look at the medical system and how far down the rabbit hole that thing went. And it's still going.
Yeah, it's still going.
You know, 500% of you know, a reasonable market price, people being charged, you know, $2,000 or something that you can buy for 20 bucks as a supply. You know, this kind of thing goes on all day long, and we supposedly have laws that say that, you know, you can't do that kind of thing, okay? I mean, and one of the other things that goes with this is, you know, and you're familiar with this because you've got a fiduciary responsibility issue that comes up from time to time with, you know, with the work you do, right? You know, yep. you're somebody's, you're working for somebody, you're supposed to have their interest out in front.
Kyle, when I first read that, I'm like, why is this even a law? That's the way you're supposed to treat people.
But I mean, you know, you look at just as one example that everybody that has ever bought or sold a house has run into. You've seen this. In the real estate business, you go to list your house, and before you actually sign the contract, a realtor will come over there and will tell you, you know, you should do all these things before you list the place. Right? Has anybody ever thought about how stupid it actually is to do any of them? I mean, seriously, other than things that would prevent underwriting, like, you know, if your basement's flooding or something like that, you gotta fix that, okay? But the rest of this, has anyone ever thought about how dumb is to say yes to absolutely any of that and do any of it? Think about this. If you do, all right, the price of the house is higher to the person who buys it, and the realtor gets to charge a 6% sales tax on every improvement you make.
First of all, now you're sort of lucky that my significant other, who's a real estate lady, isn't here, because she's also one of the stager kind of things. She's a certified stager, or whatever.
Right.
And she would push back reasonably heavy for several reasons. Now, this is a Chicago phenomenon, maybe. First of all, the price is down to 5. I don't think anybody gets 6. And secondly, the phenomenon here, Carl, is people, especially depending on where you're getting your mortgage, especially if it's FHA or whatever. I mean, if it's something that is obvious to the touch, there's been a leak in the ceiling, that kind of thing. The stuff that
right.
You say, why even? The fact is, now the phenomenon is somebody comes in and buys the home, and then the inspector comes out, they want it fixed anyway. There's no such thing as is. So her point would be to you is, if you fix it beforehand because it's an eyesore in the ceiling, you might get a few extra bucks for the house, but for her paycheck, the extra $1,000 you get, I'm not so sure that's what she's, hopefully that's not what she's driving for. But the
I'm not talking about $1,000. I'm talking about these guys come out there and do something like, you really ought to remodel your kitchen.
I'm just saying, here's, if she was here, I'm going to paraphrase. The phenomenon is, you know, I'll bring poor Maddie into this. The Maddie Webbers of the world, the 35-year-old people, they don't care. They want the thing move in condition. They don't care. The thought of somebody that age now walking in and saying, like you and I would, we're showing our age, boy, this house, I can get this thing for $450, and I can spend $20,000 and a little sweat equity, and I'll put this kitchen in with maybe one helper, and not a thing's going to be worth $500. People don't want that. You know, but the weird part is, what you're saying is everybody, I've had her come back with inspector reports where they say, you forgot to paint behind the toilet.
Oh, no, I know.
Yeah. So now my point is, if you're going to do it anyway, you might as well do it before so it looks better, is my point.
Yeah, it's just, you know, the economics on that are completely upside down.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Okay, it makes absolutely no sense at all. All right, but this is, you know, every bit of business in one form or another has turned into some kind of extraction rack.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
we started
yeah.
with this thing where everyone's going to cut their cord, right, with cable.
Yeah.
Right? Well, how's that working out now that you have to buy, you know, 6 different subscriptions at, you know, at $9.99 each?
And you still got to have the same pipe into your house.
Well, you still have the same pipe into your house. And oh, by the way, the linear TV guy has been delivering that so-called television signal as bits down a pipe for the last 10 years, which is why you have to buy a box. You can't just plug it into your television anymore.
But, Kyle, you're I think it's not often for me to give you grief back, but you and I are becoming dinosaurs. When I would buy a home, and I was in the remodeling business, and I see a bathroom above the kitchen, in the kitchen, and both of them need to be ripped out like tomorrow. I don't know how people even live there. And I'm planning to do all that anyway. But by the way, I'm buying a house for $100,000, and when I'm done with it, it's going to be worth $200,000, I hope, or $180,000 or something. The last thing I'm going to do is say I want $50 off because there's a plaster. It looked like it was leaking in the ceiling. I know it's leaking. That's why I'm getting it cheaper. But that mentality, let's just say, is gone.
Yeah, it shocks. That kind of stuff shocks me because essentially the level of expectation we've built in this country, and you know, and it's not just in real estate; it's everywhere. All right, there's no requirement for you to do anything. Everything's going to be handed to you. And by the way, that somebody manages to skim off another 5 or 10 or 15 or 20. You know, and the problem with all that skimming is it gets compounded. Okay, in the real estate market, it really burns you because if whatever you're doing is not permitted, you're running the risk of your house being reassessed.
Yeah.
And now you pay higher property taxes forever, right? Which is really bad. But of course, you know, that's all okay. And yet, we see the same thing go on everywhere. You know, you go in and we just walk into a Walmart or walk into any store. You have all these people running around that are stuffing their face full of pills, and if they stop stuffing their face with Doritos, they wouldn't need the pills.
Right. Well, Kyle, what if you were, I'm going to say I've never been out that far, if there actually were people living on a fourth moon of Alpha Centauri, if there is such a thing, listening to this going on with this vape stuff.
Well, yeah.
I'm sitting here going, oh, wait, let me get this straight. And my mother was a smoker, and I spent months and every, you know, even though she quit 12 years before she died, it still came back to bite her. And I spent, you know, day after day in various, what do they call the wards where people with, they can't breathe, the chest place wards, whatever, I can't name it. People come up with this vaping thing. And it, to me, it looks like it's people trying to get off smoking. That's why they invented this stuff. It's probably better than smoke. And some young people that also managed to get into smoking are now into this thing. And now everybody in the world is looking to ban these things. Now, if I'm sitting there in a moon of Alpha Centauri going, well, they're going to ban the thing that's better than smoking, and they still can't ban smoking.
There's so many interconnected pieces there. All right, the vape thing, as far as I can tell, because, you know, people have been using these things for years and years and years, okay, whether they're the ones that are loaded with nicotine or whether they're the ones out in Colorado are loaded with THC, and all of a sudden, out of the middle of nowhere, people start literally dropping dead with them, a handful, right? Not very many, but a few.
Well, but compared to how many people died from smoking, it's peeing in Lake Michigan. Not that anybody should die from anything, but...
Well, yeah. And then, you know, and you look at this, you go, well, you know, there's 700 people that, you know, have gotten sick or whatever. You know, it's like, and how many days would that be of folks, you know, falling over dead from emphysema?
Yeah, it's not even on a planet. Although, I mean, obviously, there's how did a derivative of vitamin E become that deadly?
Well, there's all sorts of things, You know, this is part of what happens when you have a unregulated market and people are not held to account for truthfully labeling what they're putting in things. Which by the way goes back to corruption again, because there are a lot of things out there that we have said are safe for this purpose or that. So this vitamin E acetate stuff is generally recognized as perfectly okay to either eat or put on your skin. And it's used in specifically in skin creams. Okay, it's a thickening agent.
Okay.
It, you know, it makes cream stay creamy. Somebody got the brilliant idea that because this is considered okay for human consumption in that sort of a fashion, that they could put it in a vape juice in some way, and it wouldn't do anything bad to people. Nobody had ever taken a look at what happens if you make a vapor out of this and inhale it. Because nobody ever thought that anyone would be crazy enough to do that
right.
in the first place.
Well, you know, another, you might be the only one, or Maddie, name me another product that people buy all the time. Well, some people buy all the time. There's a hint. It doesn't have to have any contents listed on it.
Beer.
I'm going to say alcohol.
Well, that's beer.
Well,
other than the ABV.
But pick up a Fireball, and look to see what's on the side of that other than corn whiskey, which you think it is, which you should know there's only a couple of ingredients in there, and you don't find it.
Yeah, oh, I know, and I think that's actually, there may actually be some law that prevents states from requiring that or something too. There's something about that not only is it not required, but there's something preventing localities and such from imposing stricter standards.
Yeah, it's bizarre.
Which, by the way, that's kind of interesting when you think about the whole cafe thing and CARB out in California. Which by the way, it's about time somebody took that on, because in terms of interstate commerce, that's flatly illegal. What CARB was doing.
What is that specifically for people who don't know?
So California got a waiver in the 1970s to impose their own emission standards on vehicles.
The reason was
California has this inversion issue, the atmospheric phenomenon that causes all sorts of smog problems. And so they got this, but they didn't get it from Congress. They got it from the executive. And the Constitution prohibits what amount to tariffs between states.
Well, how do they allow a special brews on gasoline then?
Well, that's part of it. Okay, so the thing is, if it goes through Congress and there's actual congressional authorization, then it can be done, because the Constitution says that Congress can allow this kind of thing in certain circumstances if they deem it appropriate. But the original so-called waiver was for emissions. It wasn't for fuel economy standards. It was for emissions itself. Okay, in other words, we can have less smog produced, less hydrocarbons and nitrogen oxides and things like this. And that ended up being morphed into an entire second set of steam.
Oh yeah, well,
for automobiles.
I know this, Carl, because my Suburban, my Secret Service Suburban, if you look underneath it, you'll say, what the bleep? There's, a full dual 2.25-inch stainless steel exhaust system with two converters, and one of the converters was making some racket. And I took it to the guys that I know that do undercarriage stuff. And the guy looks at it and he goes, "What the hell is this? I've never seen it." So he had to go to his computer and he goes, "That's a California 48 state setup." And thank God the whole system. If he just bought the system, it's like $1,600. And the guy, and he goes, "I'll tell you what, how about if I cut out the converter and I'll buy you a new converter and we'll put I'll weld it in for you," because the guy was good enough to weld stainless steel, which is a tough trick. And he goes, "I'll weld it in for you. How about like $250? I go, "Done." and it was 4 years ago and it's still fine. And, I pass every test. So, but I mean, you look at it, you go, "Where did this come from?" But the car's 20 years old.
It gets better. If you take that car to California, you won't be able to register it because it doesn't have a CARB compliant serial number on that replacement.
You know what? Maybe not. But You know what happened when I took it to the Illinois for my my emissions test?
Huh.
The guy goes, "You not only you pass, you have a lifetime exemption." I never had to go back.
Yeah, because it's good enough. Yeah,
yeah. And, anyway, Carl, I don't have that much time before the break, but I suspect, and if you don't, I'm going to say the issues that were happening with the Fed earlier in the week. I've gotten so many people, and I've tried to explain it a few times, but I said I would run it by you. The idea with the repos and those kinds of things. Are in one minute, I'm asking the question. I'm not. Are we starting to reach the end of the game on just dragging more money into government and just going out there and getting it? It's sort of. I'm asking that question. First of all, we'll talk about exactly what the Fed does on that, which I think you know, and then what does it mean when the game is somewhat up? I mean, I think these guys are having trouble grabbing $50 billion a month out of people. I mean, I think China...
Well, yeah, you know, the funny thing about it is that this isn't really about there being a lack of circulating cash, because if you think about it, you got a trillion four, trillion three and a half, something like that, sitting at the Fed in excess reserves. All right, so this is not what it first appears to be. This looks an awful lot like the kind of things that started in 2008, where somebody goes and tries to do one of these overnight balancing transactions, and the guy comes back and says, "Your collateral's garbage. What else do you have?" And he says, "Nothing."
Well, what I mean, but one of the articles I read was talking about under last month, and again, on this month it'll flip the other way. The last month there was a $200 billion budget deficit, a federal
right.
budget deficit that threw them over $1 trillion for the year. Now I'm guessing this month, because it's a corporate tax month. In last year, in September, it'll flip positive this month, and I'm guessing, Carl, we're going to end up, by their numbers, not yours, slightly under a trillion. Do you think I'm right with that? I got them at $1.067 trillion now.
And I'm gonna $1.067 trillion as of August, and you got, you know, 1 month to go. I don't know. This is, you know, September is a tax payment month. But September historically is also one that frequently doesn't have very large, you know, deltas one way or the other. It's not April, okay? But it is a payment month. It normally is one that has a positive balance.
Last year was a positive 119, from what I
yep. heard. Yep.
So
and
you
know, although
that.
If you look at the interesting thing about this year is that last year April was -214. Okay, now it was positive. To the you know, not deficit, but surplus. This year was 160. Okay,
right, so
now that's a pretty substantial difference, and that 50,000 delta roughly is there's all January is also a tax payment month, corporate one, and estimated, and that one also was about a 50 delta. So I wouldn't be shocked if we end up right. Just at or over a trillion.
So you're saying cut it down 50 and it'll be 60 something, which is right about where we are, and it'll be like right on the number.
That'd be my guess.
You know what? I think you're probably going to be spot on that. And I'll bet they do whatever they can to make sure it's under. why am I so suspicious these days? But
oh, you know what they did last year was that they hosed Medicare and Medicaid people that were supposed to be paid and didn't pay them until October.
I have to assume that, like most sort of slimy governments, that they are cash basis, not accrual basis.
Who's cash basis?
The federal government. They're not accrual basis. They're like Illinois.
Oh, yeah, well, yeah, I mean, you know, the MTS is essentially a balance sheet. Okay, so you could kind of look at it as a general ledger if you want to. It's got, you know, it's got both sides of the entries.
No, I understand that part, but real quick. Not that you're being an accounting lesson. There's two ways.
I know what you're saying. Yeah. No. The cash. Yeah. The it's a cash flow statement.
Right. So if you owe somebody and you don't pay them next month, you take the expense next month, like a doctor would.
That's correct.
Not like PTI would. We accrue everything to let everybody know. You know.
Yeah. It's receipts, outlays, and the deficit surplus. So it's a cash flow statement. It's not a ledger on accrual.
Yeah, I mean, if somebody sends us a bill in August, we take the expense in August.
Correct.
We don't wait until we decide to pay it, which could be God knows when if you're a government.
Well, that's the way that it, you know, when you get to a certain size in any business, the IRS makes you do that because otherwise you can game your taxes. But you know, for the government, the gaming is the game. So.
Well, isn't that, what's her name, the lady from the governor of New Jersey, Christian Todd Whitman, who allegedly balanced the budget like within a month that she got there. Didn't she go from accrual to cash and just say, we're not paying? That's how she balanced it or something like that?
The problem with doing that, of course, is, you know, I'm sure you understand, is what ends up happening is it works for a very short period of time, once, that is.
Yeah.
And then not so much.
Well, Illinois, it's still working. They don't pay anybody till the next year comes out.
Well, you know, if the people that are supplying them things allow that to go on,
well, they have. They have. S&P futures up 3. NASDAQ futures up 12. We're leaking here a little bit. We were up a lot more. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here.
Hello, Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holley, just from Elwever. Maybe we'll have some computer problems here on one of my computers, but not on the other. S&P Futures up 4. NASDAQ Futures up 1575. We're up a little bit more when we came in, but we've been positive the whole morning. Everything in the Dow, everything looks green, except for Boeing down 44 cents, but the only big movers, nobody's up over a buck or down. Apple's up 84 cents, and we've got couple other ones. We've got Merck up 46 cents, so nothing major going on there. Maddie, why don't you do traffic, weather, sports, and if this thing comes back up, we'll do the rest of the stuff. Not much going on anywhere worldwide, by the way.
I can do that. 35 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Still working on that significant crash that happened on the Dan Ryan earlier this morning. The Ryan is closed eastbound between the Stevenson and 31st Street, backed up to Roosevelt Road. All traffic is still being forced into the express lanes. From that much earlier semi into the wall crash. Extensive roadway damage, concrete is broken, a light pole is leaning, etc. Due to that crash.
Did the semi stay up or fall over?
I don't know. I'm looking for a picture. I haven't seen it yet. I'm not sure. But the crews have been working all morning to get that cleared, and that has the Ryan and Stevenson both a mess this morning, which is rare on a Friday morning. No issues on the Eisenhower, though traffic starting to build. Same for the Edens and Kennedy. That earlier crash on the Edens inbound at Devon is all clear, so that's good news. We do have an issue on the Tri-State northbound just before the Tui Toll Plaza. There is a crash that's causing congestion. But everything else looking good out there. Weather today, clouds early, and then it's going to be a pleasant day. So if you're heading out to Wrigley this afternoon for Cubs-Cardinals, you should get some nice weather. Partly cloudy skies with a high of 82. Right now it's overcast and 72 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 97 today. Right now it's clear and 74. In sports, Cubs fell behind early in spite of an Anthony Rizzo return to the lineup and solo home run, but they were trailing 4-1 heading into the ninth. They rallied for three runs to tie it in the bottom of the ninth, only to give it right back up in the tenth. They fell to the Cardinals 5-4 last night in game one of their four-game weekend extravaganza. Cubs are now four back of St. Louis with just 9 to play, so not looking good. They need to win these next three. Get back to one game back, and then we'll see what can happen from there. But I think if they lose another one, Chief, they're in big, big trouble.
Turn out the lights.
White Sox were off last night. They're in Detroit tonight to take on the Tigers in a series that no one will watch.
Yep.
Diamondbacks were off as well. They're at San Diego later on tonight. And in Thursday night football, it was Jacksonville over the Tennessee Titans 20-7.
Chief. I got the DAX up 9, call that flat. FTSE up 8, call that flat. Get around up 23.4%. Rage just asleep. Nikkei up 34.1%. Shanghai up 7.2%. Hang Seng down 33.1%. Of note, we've got oil up 61 cents, 58.74. Brent up 44 cents, 64.84. I'm going to say, Carl, our man, Arbob Gas, 170 up from probably 160 when this whole mess started last Sunday in Saudi Arabia. I'm going to say the average station in Chicago is up 50 cents. What the hell?
Well,
what the hell?
Yeah,
over.
Why is that a shock?
Well, it's not, right? I mean, who does that math? That's scary. It's one thing if you see Arbob spike into 210. I get it. But how? There's a 10 cent rise in the wholesale price over a 6 cent rise in a week, and everybody else is up 50 cents. You gotta love that.
That whole thing. I don't know. The other thing is that you have to remember too is that there's a tremendous split now between Brent and West Texas.
$6.
And that's been there for a while. And when this kind of thing happens, if there was any kind of efficiency in the market at all, and it wasn't crazy cartel behavior, you'd have that split go bananas because we are importing today less oil from Saudi Arabia than we were in like 1976 77, right after the oil embargo. It's not zero, but we have a whole lot more people in this country than we did then too, right?
Well, we're doing more ourselves, plus we're getting more from Canada and Mexico. There's really no reason for us to get it from them because it's a long slog. I mean, Even back in the day when we were supposed, how did they do this, Carl? Because allegedly we were not supposed to export oil up until a couple of years ago, and yet the stuff that came off the North Slope, there was at a time more oil coming off the North Slope than you could essentially efficiently refine in California refineries. So we had, they had some kind of a trade, which evidently was not an export, where we would ship the North Slope oil to Japan or China and trade for the stuff they were getting from the Mideast that was going to the Gulf, and it was considered more of a trade than us actually exporting and importing, right? Isn't that the way that worked? Because why send the stuff from the North Slope through the Panama Canal to the, you know, the Gulf when you're sending the Saudi stuff through the Panama Canal to Japan, or we go the other way, or whatever you do? But I mean, because it was much more efficient to do it that way. I don't think anybody disagreed with it, but it was technically an export, right? And even though we weren't supposed to.
Yeah, and there's other interesting things with regards to Saudi Arabia too, because a lot of the Saudi crude is heavy sour, which
right.
most refineries can't handle. So this you know set of facilities that was hit isn't really a refinery; it's more of a reformer for the most part, is about converting that into light sweet so that it's, you know, it's compatible with the world markets and all the refineries that are out there. And then we've got the sort of opposite problem in the United States, and a lot of the fracking oil that comes off is a very light composition, and so when it's refined, it doesn't produce as much of the distillate diesel fuel that you want. So you again, you know, you can fix that with technology, but you know that makes the oil less valuable from the standpoint of the crack, and so there's. You know, the oil is not oil, is I guess the easiest way to put it.
I'm going
to
say that an oil engineer could take a test of a barrel of oil, you know, in a hypodermic needle, stick it in there. I'll bet the right guy could tell you exactly where it came from.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no, it's the composition is very specific as to exactly, you know, where it began. But there are different grades, just like anything else. And the stuff that is not light sweet crude, whether it's on one side or the other, is worth less money because it doesn't produce the crack that people want and, you know, fill the demand profile. You can fix that, but it costs money to fix it. And that, you know, that of course comes off the value of the barrel.
Well, isn't it just to correct me? I'll run through this because I'm going to get to, what the Fed's doing, but I'm going to say there's 44 gallons in a barrel, and a quote normal barrel is going to get you roughly 2/3 gasoline, 1/3 diesel, not quite, and the rest of it is going to be paraffin, your chemical stuff, the real heavy stuff, and that's in the stuff you make plastic out of. There'd be like a gallon of that, right, of various kinds. But like you're saying, if you get the Saudi and Venezuelan or tar sands, essentially crap. You're liable to get a gallon of sand, right?
Out of the rain,
or more, and you're going to get way more heavy distillate. You can crack it to make more gasoline, but you're going to be left with mud, and not to mention every pipe in your refinery has to be heated just to get the stuff to flow, right?
It's the heat and pressure levels required to process it are much higher,
and that's why
a lot of the refineries just can't do it.
Well, that's why if you get a hurricane. And all of a sudden the power's out, virtually every horizontal pipe has to be just torn out and replaced. There's no way you're starting that flow going, because the stuff really is like mud. It's like asphalt almost. I mean, not that bad, but now you're talking about the stuff you get from some places is very gaseous. That's why it's almost dangerous. That's why if you have a railroad car of stuff coming from North Dakota and the car falls over, it's liable to blow. Where there's no chance in hell that a railroad car full of Saudi oil is ever going to blow. You probably can't light it with a match, right?
Yeah, it basically what it comes down to is that just the split, you know, oil is not one substance.
Right.
It's a mixture.
Right.
So, you know, but gasoline is not one substance either. A lot of people don't realize that. Gasoline is you know, you say gasoline, and you're like, oh, okay. But that's not one chemical.
No. It's probably what?
A mixture of chemicals.
Yeah. All right, so again, if I'm plopping you back on the second moon in Alpha Centauri, when you have every state looking to ban plastic straws, but I know Illinois is, how is it that Trump grants tariff exemption to plastic straws? I want to. You've been involved in this kind of stuff. I haven't, which fascinates the hell out of me. where exactly is the saloon? And is it the one in the Crow's Nest or one of these places where 50 fannies are in a thing buying a couple of these tariff guys every drink and shrimp cocktail they can eat to get my name on the list of the 16 items that gets pushed off 3 months? Some of the stuff I never heard of on those lists, Carl, and yet somebody somewhere has got to be squeezing his butt in a room saying, you got to give me, there was fish food, there were about three or four chemicals I never heard of, which doesn't mean anything because I'm not a chemist. Out of the 16 things, we read them last week, Maddie, right? Did we even know what 12 of them were?
No.
Who gets access? Who's the plastic straw manufacturer? So it's plastic straws and dog leashes. Dog leashes, I can understand. You don't want to piss off the dog people. But we don't have a dog leash manufacturer in this country? You couldn't set one up tomorrow?
That's the thing that really kind of, that kind of gets me, is that NPR has this Walmart inflation price index, okay, that they've been running now for the last couple of years. And they did a story on this a few days ago, and the gist of it was that, the tariffs are really hosing dog lovers, right? Because dog collars have gone up in cost by, 32% or something like this. And I'm thinking to myself, what goes into a dog collar?
Yeah.
I mean, what actual raw materials go to a dog collar? And you're telling me that the only option for doing this at a price that makes any kind of sense is 50 cent an hour slave labor, 10-year-old Chinese kids making these things.
Yeah, right.
And that's where we're all coming from. And when those get tariffed, oh my gosh, it's a calamity.
Carl, what do you think would happen if NPR did this at IKEA? Is there anything in IKEA that's not from China? I think the Swedish meatballs, got to be from China.
You got to wonder. And I just it was funny because they said, their reconstruction of this is that actual inflation, including the tariff impacts, are running about 3%. Of course, one of the things that's driving it down is this huge drop in television prices. And I'm like, wait a minute, all those are coming from China and being tariffed, right? And excuse me, but how many televisions can you eat? And by the way, how many of them do you need?
I was hoping you were going to say that, Carl. Regarding that, because before we get back to the Fed, what is the math? If you and I are sitting on the Bureau of Labor Statistics board, what is the math regarding a television drops in price, say $100 for the same TV, or you get way more of a TV for the same price, same. Okay, same. Let's say it's the same. We're not going to detail it. Now, you and I buy this TV, we save $100. I'm saying even if we have a bunch of kids, and we got Audrey's dog that thinks she's watching TV and jumps up at the TV when another dog comes on, which is interesting. Eventually, I mean, even the screwiest among us is going to get 10 years out of this TV, even if we got kids that don't behave. And the rest of the world will probably get 20 years out of the damn thing, or 15. It might be in the basement by then, but still, it's a TV. How do you compare that and the CPI with a drug you and I got to take every day? I mean,
well, that's one of the big scams in these indices and the way they're computed is that they have a multiplier in there that is essentially the percentage of this particular kind of item that is bought in the average urban consumer's budget. And so the percentage of all of these things is supposed to add to 100, and it does. But the percentage weighting that's assigned to some of these things is absolutely laughable.
Oh, yeah.
And the distortions are intentional as well. So, they'll claim that health insurance is, for a while, although it's come up a lot, for a while they were claiming this was 0.6%.
No, it's up to over 6. It was 5-something for a while, but now it's like 6.5.
Yeah, but not all that long ago.
It was
like around when Obama first started Obamacare. It was literally 0.6%.
Okay, but I guess mathematically, the TV, say 5 years, okay, it goes down $100. That's essentially $1.25 a month, where a prescription drug could be $200 a month.
Right.
I mean, are they taking the whole price, or are they taking the monthly or daily cost? Daily. I mean, what does it cost for your TV? It could be costing you $15 a pill per day.
Oh, no, I know. And this is the thing that really, like I said, the problem is
is these percentages, all right, make absolutely no sense. And then these inflators make absolutely no sense. One of the ones that I love to use because it calls into stark relief exactly how bogus these numbers are, is that new vehicles are supposed to be the index right now, the index value off the base year, which is either 82 or 84, depending on what the product is, supposedly is 148%. So you can go online and you can look up what was a, for example, GMC 1500 half-ton pickup in 1984, right? And the answer is about $7,000.
Right.
All right. Well, so if it's 148% today, would you mind telling me where I can buy my $12,000 pickup truck?
Nowhere.
Right. So obviously somebody's full of you-know-what, right?
Actually, you know what you can buy, Carl? Because I just was looking at them yesterday because somebody, my buddies, is looking for one. And I'd love to keep... I'm going to say you can buy a 2005 with about 70,000 miles on it for $12,000.
Yeah, I'd be about right.
Yeah.
But I mean, this is the kind of thing that that you look at these sorts of examples in the numbers, and of course, their argument is, well, but the truck today is so much better than the one then.
Well, it is. Well,
does it do a better job of moving me from, place one to place two? Get there, right? I mean,
I'm going to say it'll last longer. I mean, I'm not just playing devil's advocate. I mean, once they, Chevys especially, because I know a lot about Chevys, once you jumped into the 90s, they went to galvanize. Instead of the thing 1 year in the salt in Chicago, you have no truck. You at least have a truck for a while.
Well, except they didn't bother with coating the brake lines. And if you have a early 2000s Chevy truck, you'll find that out the hard way.
By the way, mine are stainless steel on my Suburban.
Yeah, well, they are now.
Yeah.
How old's your Suburban?
99.
Oh, well, guess what? I have an 03 sitting out my driveway. Guess what I had to do?
I know. They went back, they in the late model, late of that particular model, the last couple of years, they had stainless steel, and they went back and didn't use it for a while, which is really scary.
Well, now, the new ones are coated. They've got some kind of polymer coating on them, because I dug around underneath a couple of them after it happened to mine, and it's a lot of fun to fix them, too, because you got to lift the body part way off the truck to get to them.
Oh, yeah. Hey, I got a question, because I promised everybody regarding this Fed stuff. A lot of things came together this week, and at least this one article I read, Carl. One was, we had a budget, big budget deficit last month. My buddies at the Fed tell me that when the corporations pay their check and say the check comes from Chase and it drops it to Treasury, that I assumed and assumed wrongly, when you assume you make an ass out of you, and we know the usual story. I assumed that that would go into the Fed's account at, say, Citibank. And it stayed in the system. And they said, no, it actually, where the Fed deposits that, it's actually out of the system, at least for a while. I'll find out more. But I didn't really know all the right questions they asked, but my Fed guys were telling me that. Now, we also had, maybe because of the budget deficit the month before, the Treasury went out to borrow $75 billion.
Right.
But out of the 75, only 20 of it from the month before was a rollover. So there was essentially 55 new. So it's sort of
55 new issue. Yeah, about
so,
that.
So it's sort of the thing you and I and a lot of other people have been talking about. What if China called up one day and said, "I've got 40 rolling over. Just send me my check." Sort of the same. I'm not saying China did it. I have no idea who the hell did it or didn't. But what happens when that happens? When all of a sudden they go, "Hey, you idiots, just borrowed $75 billion." There's not $75 billion to give you. So the Fed immediately essentially pours the money in the system so the Treasury can borrow money from people. Is that what's happening, I think?
Well, sort of. I mean, there's $1.3 trillion roughly in excess reserves that the banks have parked at the Fed because the Fed is paying them interest in order to do that.
Right.
Which is criminally insane, but it's what they're doing.
Right.
And this is their attempt to prevent all that printed money and all of that deficit spending from the Obama years and the quantitative easing and everything from instantly showing up in the inflation numbers. Okay? Now, to compound this and make it more complicated, the Chinese have a two-tier currency system. They have the internal currency that is used inside their country, and then they have that currency which is exchangeable on the outside of the country. The two only get swapped for one another through the PBOC at whatever rate they choose to establish. Now, this is different than every other industrialized country in the world in that if you tried to do what China has done over the last 10 or 15 years with the amount of credit you've emitted into the system, your currency would have collapsed.
Well, not to mention right? they have dollar-denominated and euro-denominated debt, which is making it very hard for the guys in China to pay the interest on that because their stuff has been going down. It's been being devalued, right?
Right. And so what happens in what these repos transactions do is balance out the money. So you borrow $50,000 to go buy a truck, and between the time that you buy the truck and that transaction clears back through the system, somebody is heavy an extra $50,000 and somebody else is light $50,000.
Right, right.
Okay? And this is not a long-term problem because on balance, everybody, you know, the money sloshes around and the pool fills back out to a, you know, so everyone's got the same amount of water, so to speak. But in the short term, this can create some issues. The banks, rather than drawing out those excess reserves, didn't do that. And so when these repo transactions tried to go, you saw a spike in this overnight rate. And the Fed comes in and plays, hey, you know, we'll fix this. Well, first off, they shouldn't have done anything. What they should have done is spanked the banks that were sitting on $1.3 trillion instead of drawing the $50 billion they needed to go bounce the books. There wasn't a problem there. All right, the second thing, though, is that this is the more ominous side of it. When you start leveraging up things like this, and of course that's what banks do, right? Is they, yeah. you know, they take the reserves and they borrow more and loan it out in the economy. Eventually you get to the point that the collateral you want to post up isn't treasuries and other safe securities anymore. It's garbage. Somebody throws up on that, and now all of a sudden the answer is, okay, what's the price of this overnight loan to balance my reserve requirements? And you don't like the answer because you don't have treasury securities that you can post up as collateral anymore. Now you've got maybe subprime auto loans.
Well, Carl, one of the themes I've sort of had, because one of the, Matty knows, one of my buddies that hangs out at one of the local saloons used to be in the Fed funds business.
Right.
And that's what he did at night. And he pretty much retired because I think, Carl, we don't have much time, but I'm doing this very basic. You, for instance, since Matty Weber knows everything about football, you lose $1 million bet to him on the Bears. Okay, so you write a check to Matty Weber. You write it from XYZ Bank, and he puts it in XYY Bank. XYZ Bank might say, what the hell, we're short a mil here. And
right.
And Matty's bank is now long a mil. So the federal funds market is designed where the first guy might need $300,000 in reserves, and the second guy, obviously, is going to have extra. So they loan from one to each other at night, and that's the federal fund market. And this worked swimmingly for decades. But now the Fed, essentially, instead of draining that pool to raise interest rates up, they decided to become a competitor. Now, give us the money and get it out of the system, and we'll pay you interest on it. I think, Carl, it may be as simple, and please tell me I'm wrong, I think it may be as simple as the banks get rid of all the people who do this, and when the Fed expected the system to react normally, it's not normal anymore. The money's at the Fed. Why would I even consider getting a phone call from XYZ Bank? I haven't gotten one in a year. I laid all those people off. I mean,
Yeah, part of it's that, and then the other part of it is that I think there's been a profound collateral quality deterioration, and you saw somebody on the edge of that collateral quality situation get into trouble. And if that's the case, then the obvious question is, who was it? Because if you remember, this sort of stuff started in 07 and 08, too. And we found out after Lehman collapsed, that Citibank, this was in the Veloukis report, we found out that Citibank factually knew Lehman was out of good collateral a month before they blew up.
Yeah, it was much more sinister than we just had a little bit of a shortfall, we had it wrong.
Right. This was actually, they tried to do a tri-party repo, and Citibank came back and told them, your collateral's garbage, what else do you have? Lehman said, nothing.
Well, real quick, Carl, definition, a repo means that I'm gonna buy something from you cash wise to put cash in the system, whatever it is. I'm gonna buy, say, bonds from you cash wise. The repo part means that 30 days from now we're gonna flip the transaction the reverse side is already in the contract. That's what makes it a repo, correct?
Correct, except that normally when you're talking about this particular part of the market, it's overnight money. It's one day.
Right, but still, it's the both sides of the transaction are in the contract. That's what's make it use
correct.
The word repo.
Correct. It's a short-term balancing transaction. It has no net impact over a long period of time.
All right, Carl, thank you very much. But as usual, terrific. S&P futures up 650, NASDAQ futures up 24. Back on Monday, Stocks and Jocks.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.